Okay, we start here at the top of Pechet and Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Kli alach, mekadshim et alach, umidot yavesh, mekadshot et yavesh. Kli alach, those which are for liquid measurements, are able to be mekadesh, liquids. And we'll see that means mekadesh over here brings them into a position where they will be psul, yotze, and lino, all the things that come in with the kedushas, a goof of the korban, or of the item that is being placed on the mizbeach. There's a kli alach, but then there's midot ayavesh, which are the dried measurements. And Rashi and Tosavot discuss why does it switch from kli alach to midot ayavesh. Why would you use kli as the description or the descriptor when it comes to the liquids, and midot when it comes to yavesh? Rashi claims the reason that they said midot yavesh is because there are only shtei midot yavesh. There were only two midot yavesh, which is isaron v'chatzi isaron. So since there are only two, as opposed to kli alach, which are plentiful, there are many of them, so that's used kli. But yavesh, it says midot, because there are only two of them, those two measurements. Tosafot challenges Rashi and says, V'teima, Vayika, Bisa, and he goes all through a whole bunch of other measurements that were there. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here, by Midot Yavesh, there's a difference between Midot Yavesh and Midot Alach. By Midot Alach, the measurement does not come out the same way every time. That means, depending on the density of the liquid, the amount that is found in each Midot Alach will actually be different. So a Revita Hin of water versus a Revita Hin of wine versus a Revita Hin of oil will actually give you different amounts because of the density of the liquids. But when it comes to Yavesh, the assumption is that the density is all the same. I'm not sure that's true, but maybe in the Mikdash they only used, in terms of lach, the only thing that went in there was wheat. Flour, or the solet that was there, was very rare that it was selrim were used only twice. It was by the Korban HaOmer, and if a sota came, those were the selrim that we used. Otherwise, really, it was used out of chitim. Then he says that there's a difference, that why there's shtem, when why is it midot yavesh? He says, well, there are two ways to measure yavesh. There is a way to measure yavesh, which is piled up on top, which is gadush, or machuk, which is where you wipe off the top. So he calls it yavesh, is all the same measurement. It's just a question of whether you do it gadush or machuk. By lach, because of the density of the liquids, there would be a difference between the measurements for each one. But the liquids, I agree with you, it's a volumetric measure, so why does it matter about the density? Maybe there would be a time to just look the other way. I mean, that the same volume of wine and water will give you a different weight. Maybe that's what he's suggesting. It's a very interesting Rabbeinu Tam. That's why he says the difference between kli alach and midot yavesh. So now, the midot yavesh mekadeshot et yavesh. Ain kli alach mekadeshot et yavesh. Kli alach cannot take the yavesh and be mekadesh, but the yavesh mekadesh et alach. And not a dry measuring can't take care of being mekadesh the alach. Kli hakodesh shenigvu, that we're now going to had a hole in them. If they're still able to perform the lacha they did before, and they're still whole, then they work. If not, all of them only work bakodesh. And Rashi says bakodesh means in the azara. In a klisha rate, it's only able to be mekadesh when it's in function inside of the azara. Take a klisha rate outside of the azara, it won't perform the kiddush that you need outside of the azara. So, Amar Shmuel. Shmuel is going to have two statements here that qualify our Mishnah. The first one is, Lo shnanu ela midot. That's only true when we're talking about measurements. Because measurements are made for particular usage. They're either made for the volumetric usage by liquids, or they're used for the volumes of dry goods. They're not meant to be interchanged. They're not meant to be switched around. And therefore, they only perform what they are set out to perform, which is lach or yavesh, but not the other. Aval mizrakot, on the other hand, the mizrakot, which are not about a specific measure, but rather for the kabbalat adam, for the zrikat adam, but they were used, but they were basically utensils of utility within the Mikdash, and therefore whatever they are used for, they will be Mikdash. Whether it's normally they are used for liquids, but nevertheless they will also be Mikdash the Yavesh, because they are functional kelim that are used not for their measurement purposes, but simply for containing of whatever item is inside of them. Shnemar, because it says, by the Nisi'im, when they bring their korbanot in Parshat Noso, it says, Shnehem Mleim Solet. And over there we're talking about Karot Kesef and Mizrakot Kesef. So there you have a Karat Kesef and Mizrak Kesef that comes Mlayim Solet. So here are dry goods that are coming inside of a Mizrak and a Kiara. So you see that in these two items, even though they're normally used to contain liquids, therefore they shouldn't be mekadesh yavesh. Nevertheless, it says shnehem leim tzolot, then it works. Wait a minute. You're making an incorrect assumption. Your assumption is that these two items are coming to bring something that is a yavesh. But that's not true. You're talking about something that is a midalach. Why? Because it's mixed. Blula b'shemen. The solot that they brought, it was not plain dry solot. It's solot blula b'shemen. So that's already qualified to be a liquid. And therefore, you can't prove to me from this that it's a dry good. It's like, exactly. I was just going to say. Right. Exactly. I was going to say this. It's just like Shabbos, that lach versus yavesh depends on whether you can find the liquid. The liquid is apparent within the item that's there. So here. So he says, I'm lo nitzrucha elo liyavesh shiba. He says, wait a minute. You can't get, as Rashi says, you can't get it to be blula, mixed so well that everything has oil mixed into it, and that there's no leftover solet that doesn't have oil in it. There's going to be some solet that doesn't have oil mixed in with it, and those dry solet will be nitkadesh yidei akli. Why? Because these midot do help for yavesh, not just for lach. Not like Hilchos Shabbos here, but rather it's in a relative sense. When we talk about liquid forms are dam, something that's very viscous, not something that we're talking about here, which is tight and it doesn't really move around. That already considered a yavesh. Relative to dam, this is yavesh. The mixture of this mincha will be classified as yavesh relative to dam, and therefore its proof is from the minchat solet, mleim shnei mleim solet, that does work to show us that the karot and the mizrakot will be kadesh, something that is yavesh, not only something that is lach. So Amar Shmuel, here comes the second qualification of Shmuel in the Mishnah. Kli sharet, ein mekadshin ela shlemin. That's number one. They got to be whole. That means that they got to be all together, no holes, no problems with the kli itself. Number two, ein mekadshin ela mleim. You have to fill them up. Because if the kli is designated for a measurement, the only way it will be mekadesh is if you measure that amount in it. If you don't put that amount in it, then you're not using the kli for that utility that it's set aside for, which is to measure this measurement, and therefore will not be mekadesh. The last qualification says a mekachin ela mitochan, that they only are mekadesh from their inside, in everything that's inside the utensil, not things that are outside the utensil. The Omri law, a mekachin ela shlemim umleim umibifnim. So what's the difference between mitocham umibifnim? So Rashi claims that mibifnim means inside the azara, not inside the kli, but rather inside the azara. And therefore, the mabinayu, what's the difference between an afkamin and between a mikabinayu berutze midot? This is what you were saying about before. Of it, that the amount that's piled up on top, the gadush that's on top of the kli. If you believe that only mitochan is mikadesh, then the birutze, the gadush on top, is not nitkadesh. Whereas if you believe the issue is not mitochan, but rather mibifnim, only nezara, then birutze midot, then that which is gadush on top would be nitkadesh, because you don't require the absolute tochan shokli. Tosafot right away says, I don't understand, Rashi. The Mishnah gave us the term for what it means to be in the azara. What is that? Ve'mikajin ela bikodesh. So why would Shmuel change the Lashon HaMishnah to say mibifnim if he meant mibakodesh? He should have used the same Lashon HaMishnah like he did by Shleimim. In Shleimim, where it is already mentioned in the Mishnah, then he should have used the same Lashon here also. It should have been bakodesh rather than mibifnim. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Chaim suggests that mibifnim is mibifnim lekli kamar. Va'ate limute chakak moshevo mibachutz. That he's talking about it has to be the inside of the kli, the inner side of the kli, not the outer side of the kli. As opposed to being literally inside the kli, but rather it has to be using the functional side that is the receptacle side of the kli, not if you turn it over and the base of the kli has a receptacle in it, that you put something into there. So even though it's a inside the kli, nevertheless, that's not what it's made for. It's made to be the pedestal of the kli. It's made to be the base of the kli. That's not made to have things placed in it. So it's not about whether it's literally physically inside the kli. It could be even piled up on top. It just has to be using the side of the kli that functions as the receptacle side that was made for usage, not the side that was used for moshavo or for decorative purposes. All right, so now the Gemara says, the bright we have, all four of these, all of the qualifications together, both Lashonot and Shmuel incorporated in the bright. Then when we say in the Mishnah that they have to be Mleim, or the qualification of Shmuel that says they have to be Mleim, that's only if he doesn't intend to add any more. But if he intends to get to the final measure, measurement, then as it goes in, it becomes kodesh. So it's a big nafkamina here. If it's yet to reach it, say he intends to put it, but then for some reason it was yotze, or it was pasul b'tvul yom, before he ever got to that measurement, sounds from this, that rishon kodesh, that it would be problematic, even though he never reached the final measurement, because he intended to reach the measurement. If he's in the process of filling towards that line, it will be mitkadesh. If he never intends to fill to the line, then it won't be mitkadesh. Tanya nami ochi, we have a braita that supports that position, leim. Eim leim elu shleimim. Amar Rabbi Yossi, eim atayim bizman she'in da tol osif. Ala tol osif, rishon rishon, kodesh. It would sound like leim means shleimim, meaning it has to be full and totally there. And then Rabbi says, no, but that qualify that. That's only true when he doesn't intend to fill it to the top. But if he intends to fill it to the top, then as it goes in, it becomes kodesh. Right? Eim kliya lach mikadesh. Now, Amar Rav, ite maravasi. Eim mikadshin likarev, al mikadshim lipasel. So Rashi over here, the Gersa in Rashi, if you look in the Divrei HaMatkil, it's about dead center in the widest lines of Rashi, it says, aval mikadshin kli alach et hayavesh lipasel. Rashi's Gersa over here is that the kli alach works to be mikadesh, the yavesh, in this manner. So he has a different, we have eim mikadshin without any qualification of which kli we're talking about here, whereas Rashi says that it's talking about a kli alach that's mikadesh liyavesh. Eim mikadshim likarev, you're right, it doesn't work, it's not functional in the ability to mikadesh something that will go on the mizbeach, aval mikadshin lipasel. On the other hand, it's good enough to make it that if it's kodesh now, that if it's yatzach chutz l'klayim, or it's bulyum touches it, that it'll actually be pasul. So it brings you to a quasi level of kedusha, a level of kedusha that allow you to become pasul, but not a level of kedusha that allow you to be placed on the mizbeach. The reason I think Rashi does this is because it's only really a one-way street, which is that the klei yavesh are never mikadesh l'lach, whereas the klei lach are mikadesh l'yavesh, and we saw that. That was Shmuel's statement before, that the mizrakot and the karot are able to be mikadesh, that the lach is able to be mikadesh l'yavesh, because otherwise they're not functional, meaning that the klei yavesh is never mikadesh the klei lach. And the Klei Alach, I never mekadesh the Yavesh when it comes to measurements. So the way Rashi reads this is that this statement is really qualifying Shmuel's position that the Lach can be mekadesh the Yavesh. What does it mean that it is mekadesh the Yavesh? According to Rashi, the Klei Alach are mekadesh the Yavesh in such a way that they will be pasul, but not good enough to go on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, you could read this, the way that it reads in ours, is that this is qualifying our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that the Klei Alach or the Klei Yavesh, when they are measurements, don't work for each other. They don't work for each other to put them on the Mizbeach, but they're enough to make them pasul. So it'd be a big difference between whether you say that it's Rashi talking about the Mizrakot and the Kearot of Shmuel versus the simple reading of what we have here is that it's qualifying our Mishnah. So we're talking about even the Klei Alach and the Yavesh, those that have measurements in our Mishnah. Ikal Matni Daha, aha. Some people say this statement of Rav on another Tosefta, apparently, which is the Tosefta. We do not allow one to bring a Mincha or a Nesach or a minchat behema or bikurim from miduma. Miduma is a term throughout Shas, which means miduma is a mixture of chuma and chulin, but a mixture that does not reach the point where the chuma is nitbatel betoch the chulin. So you have a mixture of chuma and chulin here. Rashi claims, what's the problem over here? It has to be mashke Yisrael. A mincha or a nesach has to come from something that is ra'ui for a Yisrael to consume. If it's not ra'ui for Yisrael to consume, then it's no good. So even though over here a kohen could consume it, nevertheless Yisrael could not consume it. And therefore, it's pasul because it's meduma, it's not qualified to be eaten by any Yisrael, and therefore it can't be placed on the Mizbeach. Bikurim is the only question here, and Rashi points that out, that this is not about the Bikurim. Bikurim don't require Kli, Kodesh, and they don't require Hakrava, so they're definitely not in this. They were just added in, they're thrown in with the list here, but Bikurim are not qualified by that statement because it's not relevant to them, that statement. The Tosfot takes issue with that. He says that the meduma, the chuma, he doesn't understand because he thinks that it still qualifies as being Mashke Yisrael, meaning it just has to be somebody is mutar for someone to eat. Doesn't have to mean specifically Yisrael. Just has to be a Jew can consume it. A Kohen qualifies to be a Jew, consumes it, and therefore it'd be fine. So he says Meduma here, which would be a perish in Meduma that we don't see anywhere else, is Rabbeinu Chaim says, Meurav Orla B'Kilei HaKerem. Meduma is Chulin that's mixed with Orla in Kilei HaKerem. That's what's classified as Meduma. And then the Breita continues, the Sefta continues, Vein Tzarech Lamar Mi Orla M'Kilei HaKerem. Certainly you can't bring from Orla and Kilei HaKerem. So according to Rashi, it means you can't have a mixture of Chuma and Chulin, and certainly not from Orla and Kilei HaKerem would also be, I guess, a mixture of Orla and Kilei HaKerem. Whereas according to the Rabbeinu Chaim, it would be Meduma is a mixture of Chulin and Orla and Kilei HaKerem, and then Vein Tzarech Lomar is the Orla and Kilei HaKerem literally, without any mixture of them straight up, without any mixture. That's how you'll have to read it. I'm assuming that part of the Chiddush in the Meduma is that it's actually maybe a rove here. that the chulin is a rov, but yet it's still not nipatel according to Rabbanan, who require 101 for truma or 201 for kilay kerem and orla. So I'm assuming that maybe part of the chiddush of the Tosefta here is that even though it's batel midoraita, it's still not batel midorabanan, it's disqualified because a Yisrael could not but consume these items because of the restriction to Rabbanan. Alright. So again, their qualification, that statement of Rav is said on this bright or this Tosefta in Menachol, that when it says over here that klisharei doesn't work on it to make it kodesh, that is only not go on the mizbeach, but still kadosh to be posel, and that would make a lot of sense if we're talking only about a restriction to Rabbanan. Talking about a restriction to Rabbanan, meaning that midoraita is nitbatel. So in Okanam, the kli is mikadeshit in order to make it pasul in terms of kodesh, but in terms of putting on the mizbeach, it's inappropriate to put something on the mizbeach which you can't consume yourself, which is restricted to Israel to consume because of the isur darabonon that is associated with it. So it would make a difference about where you burn them. You have to get rid of them. So if they are Orla and Kilay Kerem, you can burn them anywhere you want. Once they become Pasul B'Kodesh, they have to be burnt B'Kodesh. They have to be burnt inside the Azarah. So it would make a difference of where you have to get rid of them. Alright, Tan Rabbanan. Klay Kodesh Shenigvu. So this is to your question. A Klay Kodesh that gets a hole in it, Ein Matichin Otan. You cannot heat them up to the point where you seal the hole up. Vein Matichin Otan Chaneiver. You can't put a plug in them. You can't melt, put molten lead to plug the hole in them. Nifgimu emik takninotam. If they get chipped or broken in any way, we do not fix them. Sakin shenifgam in mashchizim et gimata. Sakin that gets a significant chip in it, we do not sharpen it to get rid of that chip. Now this is assuming that after you sharpen it, it would still be visible, the pagam. If obviously the pagam goes away when you sharpen it, then it's not a problem anymore. But it's really, if you sharpen it and the pagam is still visible in some way, nishmita, if the handle fell away from the knife itself, in makzirinota, we don't put it back together. Alright, so Abba Shaul Omer, sakin mitarefet, haitab migdash. There was a sakin in the Mikdash that used to cause loss of trefot. It was a soft knife, and therefore it chipped very easily. And since it got chipped easily, it caused a lot of trefot, because of a chipped knife. Will catch on the simanim instead of slicing through them, will actually catch them and tear them away. It's a problem. The kohenim got together and decided they're going to put this knife into Gniza, that it was not usable, not allowed to be in the Mikdash. But here, as Tosfos pointed out, as you pointed out here, the issue at hand is Ein Anayut B'Makom Hashirut. That we don't, the Mikdash is a place of kavod, it's a place that we, of princely, stately being, and therefore we don't fix things, we don't patch up things and use them anymore. If you want, you have a full kli, you have a regular good kli to be used, and otherwise we dispose of it, we don't fix them. This is unbelievable, this week's parsha, that the next part of the Amud is all about Big Day Kuhuna, and the famous Agadato about the Big Day Kuhuna. So here he says that they're not, first of all, they're not made out of Masei Machat, which means we don't take a woven piece of cloth, and afterwards stitch it together to make the form of the Beged that you want. But rather, they're Oreg, they are weaved from the start to form the Beged that they are. Shinemar Masei Oreg, because that's exactly what it says. It says that the Big Day Kuhuna are Masei Oreg, and Masei Oreg means that they're woven to form the Beged that's there. Nit Ga'alu, if they are dirtied, soiled in some way, in mechapsim lo b'netar v'lo b'ol. We do not clean them with these detergents, whether it's netar, natron, or ohal. Ha b'mayim, sounds from this, if it was in water, mechapsim, that you're allowed to launder them in water to get rid of it. Samar b'ayochi kamar. Hug'u b'mayim, mechapsim oto b'netar v'ol. If they are stained or soiled in such a manner that water would remove it, plain water would be enough to launder it, then you're permitted to launder it even with detergent. On the other hand, nagul and neter ba'oil, on the other hand, if they require detergent in order to remove the stain or the soiling, af b'mayim in b'chabzim, then you're not allowed even to do it in water. Not that water would help you, because it's clear you need neter ba'oil. But the point of the statement of Baye is to teach you that if it's motor, it's motor the gamre. If it's asur, it's asur the gamre. The only determining factor is how bad is the soiling or the staining over here. B'yesh ramim in b'chabzim otam kalikar, there is no laundering whatsoever in the mikdash. That is she'en aniyut b'mokom hashirut. She wrote, which really, as Tosfos is pointing out, is a qualification of everything we said until this point in time, which is that we don't fix things in the Mikdash. We don't. Once something is ruined, we let it go, and we bring in new items, because it's not appropriate in the palace of the king, in the Makom HaMikdash, that we'd be using items that are ruined or fixed up and don't look whole and perfect when we come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tana Banan, Mi'il Kulo Shel Tchilitaya. The Mi'il is completely made out of Tchilit, out of the blue wool. Shderav Ayaset Amil Eifod Kliol Tchilit. Kliol meaning Kliol, totally. Tchilit. Shulav Ketzad. How do you make the hem at the bottom of the Mi'il? Because the Mi'il at the bottom requires the Pamon V'rimon. So how do we make that? The Mi'il itself is subject to a Machloke, a Tarishonim, the Ramban, Rashi, about whether it had sleeves or not. Meaning that it was a tunic, it was a blue tunic with a hole for your neck to go through. The question of whether it was just a sleeveless tunic or it was actually a sleeved garment, Machloke Tarishonim. In addition, we also have another Machloket HaRishonim, which we'll see in a second. We'll go with Rashi's pshat because he's here. But the Ramban also disagrees here on Rashi, which is, when it comes to the base of the Mi'il, what did they do? It says, Mevit Chelet V'Argaman V'Tulat Shani. They bring these three different types of wool, the blue, the argaman, the crimson, the purple, V'Tulat Shani, and the crimson, Shizurim, that are woven together, they're spun together, and they're made into a single thread. And they make those into pomegranates, whose mouths have not opened up. So they make them into pomegranates whose mouths have not opened up. Means a sealed pomegranate. As Rashi points out over here, that a pomegranate, as it ripens, if you look at it on the tree, if it stays on long enough, it ripens, it breaks open, it pops open, like nuts and other things that are on the tree. When they stay there long enough, their shells or their outsides crack, when they've ripened enough. So here we're talking about those rimonim that have not reached that point. So they're sealed tight, they're closed rimonim that they're making on here. So, vilkamin kona'ot shel kenasot shibrashei tinokot. They are like the balls or the top of the cones of the helmets of the children. So the helmets of the children had some sort of ball or something or cone on top of it, but that's what it looked like. And if you look in Rashi, it's interesting, at the bottom of Rashi, kona'ot, he says, shekorim helmets. They're called helmets. So he has the word helmet there. There's some sort of a little pom-pom that comes out. So, you know, item that was at the top of the helmet, that sat on the top of the helmet of the children. You bring 72 bells, shebehen shivin u'shnayin invalin, that inside of them have 72 anvils, which are the knocker that goes inside of the bell that allows the bell to be heard. I mean, that it bangs back and forth to make the bell heard. V'tola behen, shloshim v'shisha b'tzadzeh, shloshim v'shisha b'tzadzeh. He puts in them 36 on one side, 36 on the other side. Rabbi Dosa, Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, the other Gersa is Rabbi, Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Shloshim Ushisha Hayu. There are only 36 of them, Shmonasler Mitzadzeh, Shmonasler Mitzadzeh, 18 on each side. So the Gersa here, which actually makes a difference, Toleh Behen. But the other Gersa possibly is Toleh Bo. The difference would be, question is, where is it being hung over here? The Toleh Bo, Rashi's Girsa, which is what the Shita Megabetz is pointing out, is V'Toleh Bo. Toleh Bo would be referencing back to the Mi'il. Toleh Bo, on the Mi'il, you put these bells. And that's why Rashi's Girsa. If you look at Rashi, it says V'Toleh Bo Eitzel Rimon, V'Hu Pa'amon. The Pa'amon is placed next to the Rimon, and the Toleh Bo is on the Mi'il itself. On the other hand, the Girsa of the Ramban over here is V'Toleh Bahen. He places in them. What's the Behen referencing? The Rimonim. So in the Rimonim. It says, according to the Ramban, Ala Torah, actually inside the Rimonim themselves, the Re'im, in defense of Rashi, asks a number of questions. One is, if a bell is found inside of a Rimon, you won't hear the bell, because it'll pad the outside of the bell, and you won't hear the noise. It won't vibrate, and therefore you won't hear it. And it says, V'nishma kolo b'vo al kodesh. You're supposed to hear the bells when you go into the Kodesh. So either you have to, there are two possibilities. One possibility is that, that nobody heard the bell. The bell was for him. It was for the Kohen Gadol when he came into the Kodesh. It was a figurative idea that when he came into the Kodesh that everybody would know that he was there, but it was really a sense for the Kohen Gadol himself, not for anybody else, and he was the only one who had to hear it. The other possibility, that was one of the Nisim that the Ramban points out, that even though it was shrouded in this Rimon, it still made the noise of a bell. So that's the two possibilities explaining the Ramban. The other claim the Rambam has against the Ramban is that the Romanim are here, Arumanim Shalopit Chupiem. Right. How can you be put them in if they're rimonim shelopit chupim? So there, they claim in the Tzim of the Ramban that it's about the size. The Gemara here is giving the size of those rimonim. They're the size of rimonim shelopit chupim. Not to say that they didn't open their mouths. It's just the size of a rimon that hasn't opened his mouth is smaller than the size of one that has opened up already. So you make them that size, but you do leave them hollow on the inside. And you leave them hollow inside, and then you place the bell inside the hollowness of the inside. So the possibility of shelopit chupim is either that's giving you a size, or the other possibility is that they were hollow on the inside that you placed the bell in, and then they sealed them around on the outside, which would make it even more problematic in terms of the sound of the bell, because now they're totally encapsulated inside the rimonim to the point where they're sealed on the bottom. The rimon closed around the bell itself. So that's the Shita de Ramban al Torah. In this week's Parsha, you can look at it in Parsha Tetzaveh. When you get there, you can see the Ramban, both about the issue of the Me'ilat Tchelet, whether it had sleeves or didn't have sleeves, as well as this issue, his Machloket to Rashi, with regards to whether the Pamon and Rimon were separate, they were alternating on the Me'il, or whether the Pamonim were actually found inside of the Rimonim. All right, now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi in Yane, we'll call him Bar Sason, Kimachloket Kan, Kach Machloket B'Marod Nigayim. Same Machlokas we have here is the same Machlokas we have by Marod Nigayim. Truthfully, it's not the same Machlokas, it's not even the same Memrod, but it has the same numbers. So now, Marod Nigayim, Rabbi Dosa Ben Yerkudus Omer Lamed Vav. Rabbi Dosa says, Rabbi Dosa Ben Yerkudus says 36. Akavya Ben Mahalel Omer Shivim Ushtaim, 72. So the same way here we have a Machlokas, whether they're 72 bells or 36 bells. So too, by the Marod Nigayim, there's a Machlokas, whether they're 72 and 36.
72
and 36
what?
Marot Nigayim. Let's just ask, wait a minute. We have the beginning of Shavuot. We learned this together in Shavuot. Shtayin Shein Arba. I mean, there are four types of Nigayim, four whites that it is. So he says, well, that's only dealing with white. You have other colors of Nigayim, like Yirak Rak, Adam Dam, and then you have Nigay Batim, Nigay Begadim. So he says, with all of those, that's what they're talking about there. They're not disagreeing with the Mishnah in Shavuot. They're talking about the types of Marot Nigayim that are outside of the white, the spectrum of white. We're talking about those other Nigayim, and therefore there's 72 or 36. So the comparison between them is 72 or 36, not the opinions themselves, but the Rabbeinu Tam says the reason they compare the two of them is because they're both Mechaper, they're both come because of Lashon Hara. The Me'il we're going to see in a second is Mechaper and Lashon Hara, and the Nigayim come from someone who speaks Lashon Hara. So the connection drawn here by Inyanei Bar Sason is because they both are in the Inyan of Lashon Hara, and that's why he mentioned them together. Otherwise, what's the... All right, 36 and 72, it's nice that they have a Machlokas about that, but why is that relevant? Why you bring them together? Brought them together because they both relate to the Inyan of Lashon Hara. So, Amar Rabbi Inyanei Bar Sason, Lamanis Mecha Parshat Karbanot Parshat Bigdei Kehuna. So this is the Big Agarata. Why is the Parshat Karbanot next to the Parshat Kehuna? Not why Truma is next to Tetzaveh, or why in Tetzaveh they have the Karbanot that are brought over there next to the Bigdei Kehuna. You could have said it there, but rather by in Vayikra, in Parshat Tzav, where it talks about the Karbanot coming in. Vayikra Tzav talks about Karbanot, and then right after that, into the Miluim, it talks about the Bigdei Kehuna that they're going to put on to Aaron Uvanav. You could have said the same thing about Tetzaveh. But alright, they said it over there as well. You could say it in Vayakov and Pekudei also. The same thing applies, which is Lamanis Mecha Parshat Karbanot Parshat Bigdei Kehuna. The Marcha, Ma Karbanot Mechaprim, A Bigdei Kehuna Mechaprim. Just like the Karbanot Mechaper, so the Bigdei Kehuna Ketonet, Mechaperet Al Shvichut Damim. The Ketonet comes to be Mechaper and Shvichut Damim. Why? Shnemar. Vishchatu Zirizim, Vitbalu et Ketonet Badam. This is the Ketonet of Pasim Shel Yosef that the brothers took off him. When they stripped it off him, they dipped it in blood. This was a Siman Latidavo that Ketonet. It would be mechaper al shvichut damim. Mech nesai mechaper al gilu erayot. That is, shenemar asalehem mech nesai ba, the chasot besar erva. That's not any chiddush. That the mech nesai, the pants that are covering the erva, should be mechaper on the erva. Mitz nefet, the hat, mechaper al gasei ruach. Again, makes sense. Minayin amar Rabbi Chanina, yovot avar shebegova, mechaper al gova. The highest beged should come and be mechaper that sits on top of the head, that's perched upon the head, should be the item that is mechaper on someone who is a gasei ruach, who's haughty. Avnei mechaperet al hiraleiv, the belt is mechaperet on hiraleiv because hechadite, that's where it's placed. We know that the avnei had to be placed by atzilei yadav, by the elbows. On the elbow level, it was tied around, so it was actually higher up, not down by the waist level, but much higher up. Over here, right below the heart level, and therefore it's right by the heart, and therefore the avnei is mechaper al hiraleiv. Alright, the choshen mechaper al adinim, Obviously, Shneimar Vasita Choshen Mishpat. So it's Mechaper LeDinim. If I'm Mechaper LeBadat Kochavim, Shneimar Enefod Utrafim. Now, truthfully, the Pashut Pshat and the Pasuk in Hosea means that there is no Efod and there is no Trafim. That's what it means in Pashtut. The Gemara is reading it Enefod, therefore there is Trafim. Since there's no Efod, then the problem of Avodah Zarah exists. Because the Efod's gone, it's not Mechaper, therefore now we have a problem of Avodah Zarah. Mi'il Mechaper Lashon Ara. This is the connection that Rabbeinu Tam drew before, that the Mi'il is Mechaper Lashon Ara. Minayin Amar Bechanina Yavod. That something that makes noise should come and be mechaper on those that are chirping for the bed. Tzitz mechaper al azuk panim. Tzitz is on the forehead. Is mechaper on the brazen faced. Tzitz k'tiv ayah metzach haron. V'zuk panim taimu metzach isha zona. Hayah lecha. That you were brazen like that of a zona, the harlot. Terminology that's used to describe someone who's brazen refers to the metzach, that someone is like forehead, straightforward, doesn't turn away, is not embarrassed, has no reservations about what they do. So that idea is also, that's mitchaper, the other thing that's placed on the metzach, which is the tzitz. So now I ask, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, shnei dvarim lo matzinim lahem kapara b'karbanot. There are two things that we find no kapara for them in the karbanot. U'matzinim lo kapara mikom achir. They have kapara from somewhere else. Ve'elhein, shvichut amim l'shon hara. Two of the items that are mentioned in our bright over here, that the Midrash Agada, and yet over here he's suggesting that there's a totally different thing that is mechaper, and what is that? Ve'elhein, shvichut amim l'shon hara, shvichut amim egla rufa, l'shon hara miktoret. Shvichut amim is mechaper intended by the egla rufa, and l'shon hara from ktoret. The Tana Reb Chanan Yemina the Ktoret Shemechaperet. How do we know the Ktoret Shemechaper Shneimer Vaytena the Ktoret Vaychaper Alam? That's used by Adat Korach. After Adat Korach, when the Am begin to complain, there's a Magifah that comes, and then Aaron has to take the Ktoret and he runs out into the Am and says Bayamod Ben Meitim Ben Chayim, that it stops the Magifah. But Tani the Bei Rabbi Shmuel Amak Ktoret Mechaperet Al Lashon Hara Yevod Avar Shebchashai Yechaper Al Masei Chashai. That the Ktoret which is done in private means the Ktoret is only done by Kodesh on a regular basis, and then only Kodesh Kodashim on Yom HaKippurim. It's something that's always done hidden from sight. Right? Those, it could be Mechaper on the Chashai, those that speak and whisper, Lashon Hara, meaning that they're speaking at others behind their back without them and knowing, meaning they're causing damage by being a Rachil and a Lashon Hara. So you see, the Ketoret is Mechaper and not the Me'il. So Kashay Lashon Hara, Lashon Hara. Kashay Shvichat Damim, Shvichat Damim. Lashon Hara, we have the Me'il and the Ketoret. Shvichat Damim, we have the Ktonet, and we have the Egla Rufa. So Gemara says, Shvichat Damim, Shvichat Damim, Lo Kasha. Had Yedi Aman Dekatle, Had Yedi Aman Dekatle. That's a question, if we know the murderer, we don't know the murderer. If we know the murderer, then it's the Ketonet. If we don't know the murderer, it's the Egla Rufa. Gemara says, Yedi Aman Katle, Bark Tolohu. If we know the murderer, we got to put him to death. You have to execute this individual. Right, that's what works. Yeah, because it says, V'aretz lo yichupar, ela b'dam shofcho. The aretz is only mitchaper when you get rid of the murderer. You can't leave the murderer around. So the Gemara says, no. B'meizib lo atrube. It's a case of meizib, but there's no atrus, so they can't put him to death. V'lashon hara, lashon hara. What makes a difference? Nami, lo kasha, b'tzina, b'fersia. Depends what type of lashon hara he spoke. If he speaks lashon hara, b'tzina, then the ketoret is mechaper, because that's b'cheshai. If he speaks lashon hara, b'rabim, then the mi'il, which makes the noise, which makes the cold, the loud cold, that is mechaper. So now, your question is, what does it mean here that it's mechaper? So Tosus asks the question. He says, right over, mechaper l'shvichu damim. So, he says that there were some who said that there If you look at it, how can one cut mem shenakol mishkar beit mikdash and galtas and hedrin? Daishata afilu din arba mitot lahava. Because at that time there wasn't a din of arba mitot. The Gemara there says that the mitat beis din was taken away. Right? Dino mitat beit din could only be executed when they were sitting in the lishkat gazit. Once they left there, it wasn't work because it has to be hamakom. But the din mitat beis din still existed. So he says, why don't they say that that happened already 40 years before the Korban? They say, you know why? Because that's not true. There was a period of time where the Mikdash was still around, and the big thing kahuna mechaper. So there was no mitat beis din, but also was no din on mitat beis din because the big thing kahuna mechaper. So he says, what are you talking about? That can't be. Why? Because when we're talking about the kapara over here, it's not the kapara of the individual. Aval din shchigo d'adam lo ba tell ktonet mechaperet al shchigo d'amin en mechaperet al horeg. The murderer is not forgiven by the ktonet. El al Yisrael sharevim ze bazeh. What it does here is protects Klal Yisrael that should otherwise be there are Revim, they're responsible for the actions over here. So Tosfos says over here that when it comes to the Shfichut Damim, the Kapara is only in Klal Yisrael as a whole. On Lashon Hara, he says, no, that is also on the individual, because Lashon Hara, there we can't assume that people are responsible for the Lashon Hara of other individuals, and therefore it's talking about the individual himself. It is Mechaper on those individuals. So the Or Sunna, the Shfichut Damim, at least according to Tosafot, is not for the murderer, but rather for Klal Yisrael as a whole. The other items here seem to be referring to the individuals themselves who act in such a manner that they are mechaper. So right, Tosfos draws the distinction between Shfichut Damim and the other items. You could have drawn that distinction as well with Lashon Hara. Again, that Lashon Hara, the individual, is not nitchaper, but that of Klal Yisrael being responsible for that individual is nitchaper. Tosfos does not learn that way, but you could have learned that way as well in that. Rashi in Erechin extends this same Deya to the Gilui Arayot. He says, both by Shvichut Damim and Gilui Arayot, the Kapara is for all of Klal Yisrael, not for the individual themselves. And that's because in Sefer Vayikra, in Parshat Acharei Mot, in Kedoshim, it says that the Aretz will be Mechaper, or the Aretz will become Tamei from Gilui Arayot, or from Shvichut Damim. Therefore, there's a Kapara that's needed outside of the individual himself who committed the act or the sin. So that's what this Kapara by the Big Dekuna is for Klal Yisrael as a whole. Tosfos there in Erechin asks about the Tosfos here, who mentions that Lashon Hara, that others aren't responsible for it, and then he says over there might be a difference. Depends what the Lashon Hara is. If the Lashon Hara is done in private and quietly, nobody else knows about it, then we say that the Kapara here is just for the individual himself who spoke to Lashon Hara. On the other hand, if something that someone else could have stopped, or Klal Yisrael, or the broader public knew about, and they didn't object, and they didn't stop it, then the Kapara here is for the broader public and not for the individual themselves. Over there, Tosafot, also in Erechin, adds another explanation of this Gemara, and he mentions over here, he thinks that all these Kaparot are not literally for murder, or literally for Gilui Arayot, but rather things that the Gemara is medame to Shvichut Damim. Like, for instance, Mevayesh Berabim, which is considered murder. Or Gilui Arayot, the person who is promiscuous, but doesn't actually violate Gilui Arayot. All these items where the Gemara terms the person as if they have violated the Isur, that's what the Big Day Kuna are mechaper on, but not literally on the Kapra for murder or Gilui Arayot or all the other items over here. Another possibility raised by the Marsha here is that the difference might be between intent or not intent. If one unintentionally commits any of these Averot, then the Big Day Kuna are mechaper. On the other hand, if they do it intentionally, the Big Day Kuna would not help, and they will not protect the individual in this instance. Okay, we'll stop over here, and we'll start with the new Perek tomorrow. Mizbeach Mekadesh.